Pop Culture Affidavit, episode 102, A Whirlwind of Geek, Baltimore Comic Con 2019. Hello and welcome to Pop Culture Affidavit, the podcast that takes a look at everything random in the world of popular culture, which is brought to you by the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. I'm your host, Tom Panarees. Well, if episode 100's look at Megaforce took us back to the beginnings of the blog, and 101 was a retrospecticus of where we've been, then 102 is appropriately the topic that started the show, which is the Baltimore Comic Con. I've covered this every year since the very first episode, which was my coverage of the 2012 convention. It was, as the title of the episode suggests, a bit of a whirlwind this year, as Brad and I couldn't stay for the entire day of Saturday because we had to get back to Northern Virginia for a family function. That was fine, though, as we still made plans for stuff like signings and shoppings. He still got to cosplay. This time he dressed up as Link from The Legend of Zelda, complete with the Master Sword he got last year at the con, and the shield that came with his costume. Now, if you go over to the Uncollecting, you'll be able to see a post about how I prepped and what I bought and how well I did with my Uncollecting mandate. If you go to the Pop Culture Affidavit blog, you'll see my review of the show as a whole. This part of my coverage, which is this episode, is going to be the interviews that I had with a couple of the creators. I had the fortune of talking to a few of them, as well as kind of me and Brett doing our usual thing as we head back home doing our recap and him opening his mystery box. So, that's what to expect, but the general question to start us off is, how was the con? Well, there was no big podcaster meetup this year like last year. I regret that I missed running into Darren and Ruth Sutherland. They were at the Ron Randall booth, and I had meant to go by there and get something, and then we were running long on something, and I ended up jettisoning a lot of my plans, so I skipped his booth. But I did get some great moments from the people I talked to. And I'm going to get right into it. I'm going to get right into the first of those, because this guy was literally almost front and center at the con. His webcomic, The Middle Age, which also had a hardcover collection, was featured on the program. So I went to Steve Connolly's booth. I bought that hardcover. He had copies for sale. He did a sketch in the book of the main character and signed it for us, which was really, really cool. And we also talked for a few minutes about the series and the program. So here's my interview with Steve Connolly.
All right, so, yeah, so you got the chance to do the cover here in the Middle Age. So how did that come about?
I'm one of the, I think there's five of us who have exhibited at the Baltimore Comic Con all 20 years.
Oh, wow.
I think it's me, Mark Wheatley, Mark Hempel, Frank Cho, and John K. Snyder. Mark Nathan, the show promoter, contacted me and said, would you like to do the cover? And I said yes without hesitating.
Very cool.
I'm following, like, Steranko and John Romita Sr. and George Perez and so many of my favorite comic book creators that I had to say yes immediately.
So, The Middle Age has been around for a while. What is it necessarily about?
So, you're right. It's been going on for about 3 years now. I write and draw it. It's about a knight who is on a quest to rescue his love from dragons. And the very first thing that happens is he finds a magic sword that hates him. So, I kind of describe it as Princess Bride by way of Monty Python. And it's been really well received. It's gotten a few Ringo nominations, an Eisner nomination. And I've been doing comics for 20 years, as I said, and this is the thing that's resonated the most. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because it's the right time for it or I've just gotten a lot of practice in. But it's the reception's been quite nice.
And if people are listening to my show, where can they find you?
Middleagecomic.com. I'm also, the Middle Age is available to be read at Tapas and Webtoons and Go Comics and Graphite. And currently there's a Kickstarter going on. The first book was funded with a Kickstarter, and there was another one that's running right now until November 13th, and it was funded in 7 hours. And so if they want to check out Kickstarter,
so I've read the hardcover since I got home.
Thank you very much.
It's hilarious. The art is gorgeous. It's fun. It's also one of those rare comics that works across all ages. And I mean truly all ages. It's not just kind of a kiddie comic that adults can enjoy. It's something that is meant for a wide audience. There's a lot of pun, there's a lot of silly gags, but Conley also lampoons aspects of the fantasy genre that adults would get more than, say, Brett would understand at this age. I could see that Conley's, maybe he's influenced by like Chuck Jones, Matt Groening, you know, the type of cartoons and animation where, you know, there really was a aspect of it that was very, very adult and kind of subversive in that way. If you're a fan of watching Disenchanted, the Matt Groening show, you'll really, really enjoy the comic as well. So you can check it out at middleagecomic.com. I will put a link in the show notes, and that's where you can read the webcomic and also order copies of the hardcover. I'll be back in a minute with some more creator interviews, so stick around.
Well, hey there, this is Huckleberry Ham, and when I'm not busy making movies and TV shows, I enjoy listening to my favorite internet radio show, Two True Freaks. They got all sorts of shows for y'all to listen to, covering all sorts of geeky topics, Star Trek, Star Wars, cartoons, scary movies, folks eating supper, music, giant monsters, and one feller who buys stuff at garage sales. And the funny books. My word, the funny books. Old funny books. New funny books. Scary funny books. Movies about funny books. Funny books about movies. British fellers talking about funny books. And lots more. So why don't you check these fellers out and head on over to twotruefreaks.com and tell them Huckleberry sent you.
Two True Freaks, chock full of great podcasts since 2008.
Sounds great, Mr. Hound. Thanks for coming in today.
Oh, no problem, fellers. Now, if y'all'll excuse me, I have to run. I'm shooting a movie. It's a Western, and if y'all see Quick Draw McGraw, don't tell him. He's still hot at me about the good, the bad, and Huckleberry Hound. And once he gets all El Kabong, he's a pain in the you-know-where. And then there was this one time that he and Baba Louie had a little too much sarsaparilla, and Quickdraw said something to McGilla Gorilla that I won't repeat, you understand? We were shooting Yogi's gang, and things got mighty tense. Boo-Boo, and Boo-Boo's a great feller, real sharp, love working with him. Boo-Boo kept it all from Yogi, you understand? But boy, I tell you.
Two True Freaks.
So I obviously like meeting creators, and I've become the type of person who will drop money at the booth of someone who I've met in the past because I really enjoyed our conversation or I've gotten to know them on social media. I met and talked to Tom Zoller last year, and after I got home, I went online and I ordered one of his graphic novels, which is called Long Distance. It's a great, fun story about two people who were in a long-distance relationship, and Tom has a really good voice for romantic comedy and relationship genre stuff. So I was looking forward to seeing him again this year. He was highlighted on my list, and here's our conversation about his graphic novel Warning Label, as well as Love and Capes, The Family Way.
You've seen Tom or Todd Fine?
Yes.
Because I have, I don't have that. I have the other.
That, yeah.
It's just so good.
I know.
I hate him so much.
This one's actually about.
So what do you have out more recently? Because I bought Long Distance from you. You have Loving Capes.
I have two issues of that and long, Warning Label follow. If you have Long Distance, there's Time and Vine, which is about a magical time-traveling winery.
Okay.
And when you drink a bottle from 1912, you go back to 1912.
Oh, interesting.
And then Warning Label is about a girl who's cursed by her ex-boyfriend that every guy who asks her out gets the Warning Label of what they need to watch out for.
That is really interesting as well.
And it's a straight-up real Warning Label. So it's not like goofy sitcom stuff. Like, it's actually stuff they have to work out. Because when it happens, she's like, nope, it's all true. I'm like, can't lie about that. But they find out that the list can be changed.
Hmm.
So, like, she opens up and emotionally unavailable goes away. And it's not that she has to be upfront with him all the time. It's that she has to see the advantage of being emotionally available, that kind of stuff.
Cool. And Love in Capes is... Because Alan's recommended that a few times. Now that's on like its second or third series.
This would be the fifth.
Fifth series. Okay.
So I did four. I got it to where I always wanted it to be, and then I left because I was done, and it was hard to do. And I said I would come back if I had an idea, and I hadn't had one. And then I'm friends with Kerry Weissman, and he's. It's funny because he calls me over at this convention. He's all conspiratorial, and I think he's going to ask me some huge like life question, like, "Oh, is this thing actually about this?" Or, I'm like, "What is this?" I'm never coming back to Love in Capes. I'm like, I would, but I don't have an idea. I don't know what to do. I can't do the last crappy season of Scrubs because I'm not employing 200 people. It's
that
just
last
me.
Season of Scrubs didn't happen.
Yeah. Did you ever? Paul was the one who told me that when they asked Bill Lawrence about it, they said, "Why'd you do it?" He's like. Wanted to keep 200 people working.
Like that's a noble...
Once I hear that, I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So he said, I would jump... I've got an idea. And what tell me? So I'd jump in 5 years and give him two kids. I'm like, oh, that solves all my problems. And it's such a Greg Weissman answer because he time jumped in Young Justice twice. He time jumped in... He was going to time jump in Pacific Rim. He time jumped in something else, too. Like... But, oh, yeah, that solves everything. Nice. So, because I didn't want to be trapped into the arc of, like, the newborn year.
Mm-hmm.
Because, one, it's a lot of research for me.
Yeah.
as it was when Abby got pregnant, I had to read What to Expect When You're Expecting and The Girlfriend's Guide to Getting Pregnant.
Yeah, I only have him. Uh-huh. I think we were done. Yeah, he's 12, so now we're dealing with middle school. I think you're fine. I'm embarrassing. So.
We have five. And my dad came over and yelled at me once. Because my youngest brother had a daughter, and she was kind of a problem. And he comes over and he says, it's your fault. You were so good, we had more.
All right, well, thank you. I'm actually going to grab the first two issues of Love in Capes.
I'm really looking forward to reading those. If you're interested in the new Love in Capes volume, it will be out in trade in February, and you can pre-order it, or at least I did through my LCS and Comic Hub. And, you know, Tom's great. Go on to his site. I'll provide a link in the show notes for that as well. Buy a couple of his graphic novels. They are well worth the price. I also had a chance to talk to Luke Dobb. I didn't get a chance to record our conversation, but I did buy a really cool Teen Titans print off of him, plus a couple of stickers. I just wanted to drop his name here because he is a great artist, and you should go to his site, Dobb Creative, and you should support him. Go buy some of his stuff as well. But right now, I'm going to take yet another break. After this, I have conversations with two more creators, Brendan Fletcher. He and I talk about Robotech and his new series, Robotech Remix, as well as William Rosato, and I'm going to talk to him about the last days of the New Titans. So stick around.
The time is out of joint.
The time is out of joint.
The time is out of joint.
The year is 1994, or 1944, or maybe 2994? Time is under threat, and history is falling apart. Who will survive this crisis, and how will history be changed for those that do? Zero Hour Strikes takes you back to that DC Comics crossover and covers the entire story, issue by issue, tie-in by tie-in, as the DC Universe goes down to zero. Join Bass and Siskoid at fireandwaterpodcast.com or on iTunes. Zero Hour Strikes, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Last episode, you heard more of my conversation with Donovan Grant about Robotech, and afterward I mentioned that I had kept up with the Titan Comics series. That series just ended, but is rebooted, or been remixed, as Robotech Remix, which stars Ange's favorite character, Dana Sterling. The writer of that book is Brendan Fletcher, who was one of the creators of the Burnside Batgirl a few years back,
He signed a few of my comics and took the time to talk to me. We had a great conversation about his new Robotech series, Burnside Batgirl, as well as Robotech in general. So here's me and Brendan Fletcher.
You've met my friend. She has a Batgirl podcast. Her name is Stella.
Oh,
yeah,
Stella.
She and I co-host Stella. A podcast about literature.
So I wanted to ask. I loved the Burnside Batgirl.
Oh, thank you.
It got me back into the book because I had dropped it, and then it was her because she had hyped it. You know, she had talked about it, and I bought the first couple issues. I was like,
yeah,
this is excellent.
I knew who she was from online, and then she met us in San Diego, and she had a lot of questions because she was concerned about the way that we were going to approach it, and that stuff was all valid.
Yeah.
And even today, people who didn't actually read it, who look at it just on a surface level, like, I get why it would seem off-putting, but there are psychological reasons for things to have happened the way that they did.
Yeah.
And when we were given the gig, we were told that the character was 21 years old. So part of our goal was to play the character like she was 21, like an actual 21-year-old young woman struggling with the things that a 21-year-old would. After, you know, in this fictional universe, having gone through all the things that this particular 21-year-old young woman had gone through. And it was telling a story about this young woman trying to come to terms with that stuff. Which is, I mean, in a similar way, what I'm doing with Robotech now.
Yeah, so I was going to ask
you. Not quite a young woman, but a middle-aged woman dealing with her. I mean, it's a meta story about, of course, us as middle-aged men in a lot of cases, living within our own nostalgia in a way, reading these books because of for nostalgic reasons.
Yeah.
And in this case, we have a character who is nostalgic in different ways for her own youth, but she is living in that time, or living in something that feels and looks like that time, but because of her actions is actually a splinter timeline.
Yeah.
She's caused things to happen differently, or she and her compatriots from her future have caused things to happen differently in her past that may or may not be positive.
Yeah, so was using Dana in the series your idea, or was that... You know, how did you come about writing Dana Sterling when up to this point it was all Rick and Minmay and it was all the Macross stuff? So now
let's see, if I recall correctly, the one thing I do remember was I turned down the gig even before they properly offered it to me.
Oh, really?
I had a sense that they were about to offer me the gig, and I kind of waved my hand and I said, if this is all about asking me to do Robotech, don't even, you know, I appreciate that you guys have done your own thing, and you know, it's maybe not my jam, and I love the show for what it was. I am a Macross fan as well, and that's kind of where my heart is at the moment. And, you know, and they were very receptive, and they took me out for coffee, and they said, just hear me out. It was Chris Thompson, their original brand manager, and he said, just hear me out. This is where the story is going that we're working on. And I said, okay, well, that's interesting. And he said, and this is what you would have to play with. And it just floored me. And I was basically like, you have carte blanche. After this point, like, nothing is the same. You have the potential of using any character from any of the three original shows because of the way time has splintered and the way that this sort of look at the potential, you know, multiple universes of, that exist within the Robotech universe can coexist. So anything is possible. But they had ended on this note with Dana, and that seemed like, to me, if I have to pick up and run with it, the thing with the most potential, because as if you're a longtime fan, you are probably aware that the Southern Cross in its original incarnation was not a finished product, and the Master's Saga in Robotech felt also incomplete. Even though they were able to
flesh Dana out as a little more well-rounded a character than Jean-Francais was in Southern Cross. There was still not enough time or animation to really dig into the sort of psychological underpinnings of what was driving her as a character. So it was more like they were just alluding to things. I get to actually write about that stuff.
That's really
so
cool,
I get to tell this story about this woman when she's 40 years old, reliving her past in a way that's messed up, but also flashing back to her own past to tell the reader why she was the way she was when you saw her on TV. I also get to flesh out the stuff that happened in between the Masters and the New Generation and what happened after Dana left Earth. I get to talk about the stuff in the continuity as it, the official continuity as it is now, vis-a-vis the way the McKinney books were and all the old comics were. So I have the opportunity to actually make official statements on those things and show some scenes and talk about Dana's relationship with Bowie, where she ended up, how things worked out with her and Maya, how things worked out with her and her parents.
Oh, this is, I mean, I was psyched for the book before it came out. Now you're getting more excited.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You're doing a very good job selling it.
Oh, well,
the fact
I mean,
that you mentioned the McKinney novels is really interesting because I read those like 20 years ago. But,
yeah.
But I always found them really fascinating.
I just wrote a bunch of scenes and I had to go back and forth with Harmony Gold. And it's all about stuff that if you read the novels, you probably recognize. And,
very cool. Very cool.
Maybe you're seeing them in a slightly different light now, a different shape, or you'll actually see scenes that weren't in the book but are extensions of things you might have... I'm trying to be vague. But
no, I know. I know you can't tell me too much.
But if you've read even the first issue of this, you can imagine what I'm focusing on.
Yeah, yeah.
So much of the spotlight I am putting on characters and scenes is given to Dana's relationship with her parents, Dana's relationship with Bowie, Dana's relationship with everybody around those guys. And then the Macross characters are there.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously am not going to sideline Max and Miria, but I will say that I feel like in every incarnation of Macross, including its inclusion in the Robotech saga, Rick, Lisa, Minmay, Hikaru, Misa, Minmay, have a story that has a beginning, middle, and end, and it finishes every time. And I don't want to be the person to continue their story. So while they are here in our story and they will contribute in ways that are substantial, to me, the important part of the important part that they play in every saga ends with the end of SDF Macross. The episode 36 of Robotech, and the notion that their movement out into space, whether it's with the REF or on the Mega Road, is them leading the way into the future, opening the door for the next generation, and that next generation can be Macross Plus, Macross 7, Macross 2, whatever you want. It can be the Master's Saga, Southern Cross, or just mecha anime in general. Their departure from the Earth opened the door for other shows, sequels, other shows that have nothing to do with it in a meta way. I mean, there's a lot that I want to talk about there, but I don't necessarily want to write the continuing adventures of Rick Hunter and Lisa Hayes.
Interesting. Very cool.
And it's one of the reasons that on the outset you know that Minmay's not around. And Rick is absent, and Lisa's got a job, and I mean, I have a lot to say, but I don't want to spoil it.
No, I know, but I'm looking forward to more, and I hope anybody who's listening picks it up. So
my other big creator interview was with William Rosato,
who, if you're familiar with DC in the 90s, especially the mid to late 90s, you probably recognize his name from titles like Green Arrow, and I believe he did some other work across some of the Bat titles and things like that. Well, he was the penciler on the New Titans at the very, very end of its run in the mid-90s. I had brought with me with the last issue of the series, which I also had signed by Marv Wolfman, and I didn't get a chance to really talk to Marv because he was busy with signing, and while he said I could come back to his booth later, I wound up not being able to find a moment because his table was like just always crowded with fans, which is fine. The man is a legend. I have multiple things he's signed, and pretty much kind of the point where unless I have something of significance that I really would like him to sign or significant value, I can actually skip his table because, you know, because I could go to Marv Wolfman's table with a stack of Titans comics and blow like, you know, $100 or whatever, because it's $5 a signature, and still not have everything signed. But anyway, that's aside from that. I did have him sign five things. New Teen Titans number 34, which is a key Deathstroke issue. Tales of the Teen Titans number 44, which is the first appearance of Dick Grayson in the Nightwing costume. The New Teen Titans graphic novel Games from a few years ago. The Legends of the DC Universe Crisis on Infinite Earth special. And the aforementioned New Titans number 130, which is the last issue of the series. I also had Todd Klein, the letterer, sign both New Teen Titans number 34 and Tales of the Teen Titans 44, and I also bought some really, really cool looking prints off of him. A Alex Ross drawn, Todd Klein lettered one called Comic Book Dreams, and then another one which is this whole comic book lettering guide that I had him sign. If you go over the uncollecting with my purchases there, you can see those pictures. They're really cool. But William Rosato is the one I had an interview with for a good, you know, 10 to 20 minutes. The end of New Titans is something I've blogged about. It was one of the first things I blogged about steadily, starting with 71 and moving all the way to 130 with My Life as a Teen Titan, which you can find over on this site. And it wasn't the most noble of endings for a title that was really one of the like stalwarts of DC back in the mid-80s. You know, it was one of the marquee titles. And even if I had gotten the chance to talk to Marv Wolfman, I don't think I would have asked him about this book anyway, because from the interviews I've read, these final couple of years on a book are not his favorite. Plus, why would I ask questions I already know the answers to? You know, the interviews that have been done with him over the years about it really kind of told the story, so there's really no need for me to tell it. But Will Rosato was somebody I had never seen on a convention list. And I thought he might have an interesting perspective about the final days of the title and what he experienced. So he was more than gracious enough to talk to me, and we had a great conversation. So here is me talking to Will Rosato.
I did want to ask you about, I know this is, what, 25 years ago? Roughly 20, 90, 94, early, it was 20, 94, yeah, 94,
95?
Yeah.
96.
Well,
this is... It came out in 96.
Six.
But
really? I just want to ask you about the run, like, you know, how you got the assignment and what you remember about it.
So, Pat Garrahy was at Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had just finished something at Marvel. I forget what it was. Maybe some G.I. Joe work or an Iron Man job. And Pat was leaving Marvel to go to DC. He just finished his run on Daredevil with Scott McDaniel and sort of got a lot of notice with that. And then I stopped by his office, showed him some work, and he said, oh, look, I'm going over to DC, taking over the Titans book and Deathstroke, and maybe, look me up when I'm settled. And so I checked in with him, and he had initially it was a fill-in, I think issue 117. And then while working on that issue, they decided, well, we'll just give you the book to be the regular penciler on it. And after that, they Mike Carlin chatted with me, and he said, look, the book is not going to be around for much longer. Mm-hmm. It was sort of, this was at the tail end of the New Titans run. Yeah. But he said, you know, just take it for what it is, sort of a learning experience, your first regular book, have fun on it, and that's it. So I was able to kind of work free and easy on it without too much stress, because I knew the book was going to end eventually. Mm-hmm. But it was, I was happy to have the opportunity. I was a fan of the Titan, so it was cool to also work on that. You know, you walked in on a conversation earlier with the guy from Star Joe's. G.I. Joe's my other... I had a lot of favorite books.
G.I. Joe's what got me into comics back in 30-something years ago.
I think it got a lot of people into comics and to a lot of things. Toy collecting and like...
Sure, Larry Hama owes my parents a lot of money at this point.
Larry Hama, it's funny, Larry Hama's a nice guy, but I still, it's like trying to talk to like a beautiful woman or something. Like every time I see him, I always get, I get tight, like, I just can't, I just don't know what to say to him.
That was my, I met him once, that was my experience, where he was incredibly nice, but I was just like sputtering the entire time.
Yeah, and you know, I see... You know that Chris Farley character, SNL,
yes,
where he
exactly.
gets... That's me when... And, you know, he's trying to talk to Paul McCartney. I'm trying to say something to Larry, and it always comes out awkward, and I'm always, like, smacking myself, and like, oh, man, why did I say that? I could have said that a different way. But, I don't know, I guess as far as... my thoughts on the actual Titans run, I wish I had drawn the Titans that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it was just Donna Troy, not Donna Troy, Darkstar. Drawing this outfit just took a lot of time. Those shoulder pauldrons are just kind of, they look simple, but they're just kind of... They got complicated.
Hmm.
Didn't really like Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner's face mask. I wish Roy... I didn't like Roy's costume design.
Yeah.
What they did to Cyborg was... It's kind of weird.
They eventually brought it all back.
Yeah. I didn't like Minion.
Mm-hmm.
I love Terror... I mean... Yeah, I love Starfire, Terra.
Yeah, yeah.
The core group. There was just no Nightwing.
No, I understand.
You know? And so you missed that dynamic. There's no Garth. There were no, the Titans that... I mean, I love the Nick Hardy Titans. I love the George Perez Titans.
Remember?
And so I was hoping for more of that. But other than that, I liked the sci-fi element. They were in space a lot, which was kind of interesting. Raven was fun.
Mm-hmm.
I loved drawing Raven, and I liked
the way you toned her costume down, at least at this point.
Tone,
because the I remember a little bit. At least you kept her cloak on a little more.
Well, there were, I forget. I think this was referenced from the previous artist. I gave her the pants.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I think I don't remember. You know,
I have a T-shirt from around the 100th issue that has, I think Tom Grummet did the design of that
of this
on the or the original version of that sort of.
Yeah, I think it was Grummet or Bill Jaska.
Yeah.
I think was the previous artist.
Yeah,
and
so it's on there.
And I was trying to remember. Where these looks came from.
Mm-hmm.
I did this Starfire look, like a quick redesign, and the Terra look with the little vest and boots. Just I don't know. Pat had asked.
Yeah.
Just for like minor tweaks on things. If it was just a little more of this, just more flashback stuff of old Robin and Kid Flash. But I liked Impulse. I thought that was it's sort of a changing like for like, or switching out like for like. Instead of Kid Flash, it's Impulse, but I love the last page. So the last page. So when I drew this, it was fun. It was my first time drawing Nightwing, and I got Speedy and Kid Flash, and like the old the 80s group here, but like I love this little thanks panel, like, you know, being a little fanboy, having my name there with all that of the other really artists. Cool, yeah. Like, I thought, oh man, that's yeah. That's just I don't know. I was especially touched by that.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm glad I have this page. Like, I have the original.
Oh,
so,
that's awesome.
But yeah, no, it was really cool. Like, again, have my name there with Garcia Lopez and then George and yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem.
As I drop things.
Yeah. So these pages, it's funny, the original pages, it's like half the page is inked on a piece of vellum because of these color holds. And a lot of this is on overlays. So without the overlay, it just looks like there's just this empty space.
Huh.
It's like she's not
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, this is fun. When Will Blyberg started inking me, and I started cleaning up the pages, because again, I was learning.
Yeah.
Like I was still new, learning how to do this stuff and. And I was sort of a sloppy penciler, but I started to clean up as I went on, and like this was it's a great learning experience there. Here's a couple of pages.
Oh wow, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the overlay pages, again, like they're difficult to sell because the overlays are integral to to the page.
That's really cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure meeting you. Thank you very much.
And I
got to
be honest there.
Too.
I did not go in expecting such a great conversation. I also didn't go in expecting such a great conversation with Brendan Fletcher either. I mean, those two guys really took the time to talk to me, and I really appreciated that. Warozato had original pages from his Titans run on sale, but they were like about $150 each, and I just didn't have the money to spend, but it would have been cool. I was so glad, or I am so glad that he was so gracious in talking to me. I'm going to take one last break, and I'll be back for my con wrap-up with Brett. Stick around.
A historic moment tonight. The Berlin Wall can no longer contain the East German people.
It is 1989. After 28 years of dividing a city and symbolizing the divide of the Cold War, the Berlin Wall opens up, and from there, everything changes. Fallen Walls, Open Curtains is a podcast miniseries from Pop Culture Affidavit and hosted by me, Tom Panarese. From November 2019 until December 2021, I am going to take a look at the events that took place 30 years ago, beginning with the fall of the Berlin Wall and ending with the dissolution of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. Along the way, I will be flashing back to the landmark and not-so-landmark pieces of popular culture that reflected and defined the Cold War. The first episode will drop on November 9th, 2019, and future episodes will be released quarterly at popcultureaffidavit.com and twotruefreaks.com. So, Brett and I, after we did our signings and our shopping, got lunch at Jimmy John's, and then we hauled
all of our stuff back up to the parking garage, and we headed back to Virginia, where we sat in traffic repeatedly. But that's Northern Virginia for you. On our way, we did what we always do, which was talked about the convention and what we liked and what we got. So here's our conversation on our way home from the Baltimore Comic Con.
All right, so we're on our way home. We only did half a day like usual. So usually we go in the morning and then we leave probably around, what, 4 or 5 o'clock?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But we also cut in for lunch at Jimmy John's.
Yeah, so what we did is, it's your grandmother's birthday, so we're going home for a birthday celebration.
And beef bourguignon.
Yes, beef bourguignon and carrot cake, so.
Really the best foods on earth.
Yes, so we're going home because we have a family thing. So we're only able to do the morning. And going in wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. There's a lot of street closures today in Baltimore because the marathon was today.
Which, I mean, I guess that actually kind of helped a bit.
It helped with the crowd because the crowd wasn't as big. But I was talking to Luke Dobb, who I bought that Titans. Teen Titans print off of.
And I got the Skeletor sticker.
Skeletor sticker.
You have that, right?
Yeah, it's in the stuff. He was saying that it's just kind of slow, and I guess having the marathon didn't really help because it was, you know, there's the parking garages are a lot more full today as well. But
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It's funny because we were like pulling out, and someone pulled up, rolled down their window, and they were like, "Do you mind if we steal your spot once you leave?"
Yeah. So no, well, we were able to give it to them. We were able to get out of there with no problem. So we got all our stuff in the car. And we're good to go, so.
It's funny because we got there and, like, the garage was basically empty, and we got back and it was, like, packed to the brim.
Yeah, it was really, really full.
So, should we open up the box?
No, let's talk a little bit about what we did first. So, yeah, so we got in, we got in quickly, and it didn't take very long to get to the garage. We had to do a different garage this year because of the road closings and stuff.
Yep.
That all worked out fine. But and then we did our usual sitting around, and they let us in at Rope Drop. I didn't get as many signatures this time, partially because two of the people who I wanted to get signed had like lines that I was not willing to stand around for. And then as you'll hear on the earlier segments, two people who. There were two people who I talked to and got things from, and we stood and talked to them for about, I think a combined total of like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's when I decided, all right, I'm just going to kind of cut bait and just decided to do, the ones that we did. And then we went around shopping and everything, and it did get a little hectic too.
Cause I found Infinity Gauntlets.
You did find Infinity Gauntlets, both the giant one and the Iron Man.
Yeah, and one. I also got a Twinkie the Kid pop figure.
You did get a Twinkie the Kid pop figure.
I nearly got Kool-Aid Man or Bulbasaur, but I mean, when you can get a Twinkie the Kid pop figure, you don't pass up that chance.
It's true.
And it's funny because, like, instead of having, like, other characters on the back, like, other, like, Hostess products, there's just a giant high-def picture of a Twinkie on the back of the box.
Yes. I haven't had a Twinkie in a very, very long time.
Apparently, like, production of them shut down in, like, 2011, but then resumed.
Yeah, I think so. I think I remember hearing about that.
And I think you can buy on eBay, like, Twinkies from, like, 1990-something.
I'm sure that you can buy Twinkies from 1990-something on eBay. I don't know why you would want to. Yeah, so we got a couple of posters. I got a couple of prints that I'll show on the website where I got a print by Alex Ross that Todd Klein had lettered and was selling. It was signed by Ross and Todd Klein. And then I got that lettering one.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then I bought a Teen Titans print off of Luke Dobb. And then I got a couple of things from different creators that you've heard on the show already, because Tom Zoller and Steve Conley, who does the middle age. That was pretty cool. He drew a little sketch in the book, too.
Yeah.
So I'll have to take a picture of that.
I got,
What did you get?
Pokemon sketch.
Oh, yeah. She was really, really excited.
Yeah, she wanted to take a picture with me because of my costume.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, you were... What was your costume this year?
I cosplayed as Link from The Legend of Zelda, Skyward Sword Edition, I think.
Okay, cool.
Just want to specify that so no one thinks I was, like, Breath of the Wild Link.
All right, I mean... Well, you had the shield and the sword, too.
Yeah, I was... I finally got used to it, and we were able to... I was able to wear the shield on my back.
Cool.
So...
Yeah, so... And a couple other things I got. So I got a bunch of trades and comics, which in another segment I'll talk about what I picked up. And then I got a... You know, I grabbed that Star Wars t-shirt. You got Spidey socks.
Yes.
And you got a Spider-Gwen poster and a Zelda Triforce poster.
Yeah. That was really cool.
And I got a couple of new pint glasses. One of Batman with a Neil Adams Batman drawing. And then another one of Nightwing with, I believe it's Scott McDaniel. And I believe it's the cover to Nightwing number one on the pint glass. That was pretty cool.
We were walking by a comic stand and there were like 5,000 different copies of like...
Yeah, that was crazy. So we were walking by one of the booths that had all those comics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there was just two shelves, one end of one shelf to another, and one end of, like, it must have been easily 10 to 15 copies of the new Teen Titans number one from 1980, which is a really expensive book. And so that's like easily, that was like probably $1,000 worth of comics sitting right there. And I have that one at home.
You just have to think, like, how do you acquire those comics?
I don't know.
Unless, like, they bought it when it first came out for, like, cheap.
Possibly. They bought somebody's collection, maybe.
Or possibly they bought it off of someone who didn't know the real worth.
Possibly. Or maybe they actually paid the real worth for it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, people go around acquiring those.
I also got a pin.
You did get a pin. That's right. You got a lapel pin. It was Zelda, right?
Breath of the Wild. It was the one with the Z.
Okay.
And the dirtied up Master Sword going through it.
Yeah.
And the Silent Princess flower going.
Okay. So the other big thing that you got is that, like, you know, every year we've gone, I think for the past 3 years, right? You've got a mystery box.
Yeah.
So. So 2 years ago was Pokemon, right?
Yep.
And then last year,
because I remember the first
year.
Last
year was Steven Universe?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I remember the first year I wanted one, and you were like, well, next year if you go, you can get it, and I held you up on that offer, or something like that, I think.
Yeah. So we got your mystery box right before we went to lunch, because we were like, you know, we're going to get the mystery box on the way out, and apparently all the Nintendo ones sold out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I guess if we want to...
Except for this Mega Man.
Yeah, so I guess if we go next year, we'll have to make a note of that. Like, you know, see what Nintendo ones are there.
Yeah.
And maybe get one early.
So,
all right, so you have a Mega Man mystery box.
Do. All
right.
Okay, so I'm opening it up right now, and I can already see one item that's really, really cool. It's a Dr. Wily Pop figure.
Oh, cool.
Alright, so we have a Mega Man, I think it's like a thermos thing,
Gimmick bobber.
It looks like an energy tank.
Alright, I can't turn around.
Yeah,
to
I know, that's why I'm describing it. We have a Dr. Wily Pop figure, a hilariously looking, it's by, I think, Monster Factory, Mega Man doll.
Alright.
A little energy tank mini glass, which I'm assuming is a shot glass. A air freshener that's vanilla scent of Mega Man. A Mega Man lanyard with a pixelated Mega Man keychain on it.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I'm going to open up the mini glass to see if it's a shot glass.
Okay. Well, you already got your money's worth with the, you got the pop figure, the lanyard's pretty cool.
I got a shot glass.
Yeah, a shot glass. And was it like a...
It is a shot glass. Ah. No, it's like a tiny mug.
Oh, okay.
That's adorable.
Oh, cool. I can't.
I mean, Violet.
Oh, okay.
And here's what the Monster Factory doll looks like.
Oh, cool.
It's hilarious. Right.
Well, cool, you got something. You got some cool Mega Man stuff. So you've been playing Mega Man a lot lately.
Yeah, Mega Man 11. I don't want to say the new game because it came out like a year ago, I think.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, technically the newest Mega Man game. I don't know if you'd count Mega Man X in that. I'm going to open up this mug thing to see what it is.
Mega Man 11 is a side scroller, though, right? It's like all the other ones.
It's just yeah, it's like Switch. The old ones. It's
That's
not,
cool.
It is really cool. And it's really, really fun as well. Yeah, it's like the, oh my gosh, I've always wanted one of these. It's like a sort of water bottle thing, but it looks like a soda can.
Oh, okay.
And it's an energy tank.
Oh, okay, cool.
And the top looks like this.
Oh, cool. So you got like a water bottle.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
And it's BPA free. I'm going to put it back in the bubble wrap.
Glad it's BPA free.
I don't know, the sticker just said that. But yeah, that's what we got at Comic-Con. I think we got some other stuff.
But you bought some comics too.
I did.
What did you?
I got Lumberjanes.
Yeah, you got some Lumberjanes comics.
What else did I buy? Did I buy anything else?
I don't know. I think you got...
I usually get a bunch of trades, but this time I didn't.
Yeah, you didn't seem to find any trades or anything, but we didn't really go to any of the...
Yeah, well, that was also because we were trying to, like, we didn't have a bunch of time to blow.
Yeah, but we also...
And I didn't have a bunch of
There wasn't money. Anything, I don't think there was anything that was really catching your eye either.
Yeah.
So, well, it's weird because Boom didn't have a booth this time around.
Yeah, which is really weird.
Yeah, which is kind of disappointing, too, because you usually spend a little bit of money at the booth.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got the posters you wanted...
Yeah.
And you got your cool looking stuff in your mystery boxes. That's what you wanted. You got a pin. You got a sketch. So we're in and out of traffic right now. We're headed to Krispy Kreme before we head home.
Yes.
So we're gonna get our donuts, which is very important.
Obviously.
Yeah. And you'll actually be back in our next episode because the next episode is gonna be about The Legend of Zelda. And The Legend of Zelda video games and stuff. So that's something that people can look forward to hearing in the next episode. But right now we're going to sign off and I'll be back just to wrap things up. So
and that'll
thank
do
you
it.
For coming with me.
Thank you once You're again welcome. To the convention yeah. organizers for the press pass. You can check them out on BaltimoreComicCon.com and on Twitter at Baltimore Comics. They're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Snapchat. Next year's convention is the weekend of October 22nd. I recommend signing up for their mailing list. You get some really good info about the show, who's coming, special announcements. You can nominate and vote in the Ringo Awards, I believe. So things that really keep you informed about the show. So I would also follow them on Facebook and Twitter because, once again, you see some great stuff out of the show as well as announcements as to what's going to go on. Thank you also to Steve Conley, Tom Zoller, Brendan Fletcher, and Will Rosato, as well as everybody else I saw at the Baltimore Comic Con, and also to Brett, who came with me once again. Speaking of Brett, we're not done with him and me doing a podcast. We are going to sit down next episode and talk about his favorite video game franchise, and that is The Legend of Zelda. So come back for that, and until then, don't forget to check me out on Twitter and Facebook, as well as check the blog for some more stuff. Leave a review on iTunes, and as always, thank you very much for listening, and take care. Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Affidavit, which is produced by me, Tom Panarese. All clips are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. This podcast is a part of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you can find at twotruefreaks.com. If you like the show, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps the show get noticed by other people. Feedback via email can be sent to popcultureaffidavit@gmail.com. For show notes and essays and other things random in the world of popular culture, visit popcultureaffidavit.com. You can also follow this show on Facebook at facebook.com/popcultureaffidavit and on Twitter at popaff. That's P-O-P-A-F-F. Thanks for listening, and come back next time for more pop culture randomness.